This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
It is April 28th, 2024, and this is hour one of the Sunday Cincinnati Inquirer. I'm Jonathan. Today's headline article, Art, Historic Albee Arch to Vanish from City's Convention Center. Theater entrance will find a new home. Union Terminal mosaics, interior spacewalk mural will be part of latest renovation. Sydney Franklin and Jeff Seuss, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. The historic Albee Arch and most of the public art that punctuates the walls of the Duke Energy Convention Center will be permanently removed this summer. Katie Westbrook, Development Director at the Cincinnati Center City Development Corp, also known as 3CDC, told the Inquirer that just two of the 12 pieces of art will be included in the 56-year-old building's latest renovation. Only the spacewalk mural by Charlie Harper inside the building and the Union Terminal mosaic murals by Wendell Reese that face Central Avenue will be part of the redevelopment when the convention center reopens in January of 2026. We plan on treating each piece with respect and dignity it deserves, says Westbrook. Removing the Albee Theater facade allows the city of Cincinnati to find a location for the marble remnants where the beauty can be celebrated. Beth Johnson, Executive Director of the Cincinnati Preservation Association. All the other interior artwork will be saved and handed over to the City of Cincinnati, which owns everything, including the Albee Arch, a mammoth remnant of the elegant Albee Theater. Ben Brunhinger, spokesperson for City Manager Cheryl Long, said via email that the removed pieces will be stored in an unidentified city-owned property until a reuse purpose is identified and city funds are appropriated. The city will also pay for the removal, relocation, and storage of the public art. Brunhinger said some of the city agencies and other cultural institutions have expressed interest in housing the pieces permanently. How will the Albee Arch come down? The Albee Arch currently stands 61 feet tall at the 5th and Plum Street entrances of the building. Made of marble, it's estimated to weigh around 40,000 pounds. Dismantling the Albee Arch was always part of the plan, Westbrook admitted. The history of the arch isn't intertwined with the convention center, but it's a structure that's revered, so it makes sense to save it. The Albee Arch was incorporated into the major rendering redesign of the convention center in 1986. Beth Johnson, executive director of the Cincinnati Preservation Association, thinks that it was a great solution at the time, but she believes that the arch's current location just doesn't do it justice. I completely understand it not being part of the plan to keep it on the convention center, she said. People don't know what it is, and that section of Fifth Street isn't a pedestrian-friendly environment. It's just kind of this artwork that doesn't really match the rest of the building. Johnson thinks now is the ideal time to find a place downtown that's more fitting for the Albee Arch, such as Fountain Square or in Schmall Park. Removing the Albee Theater facade from the Cincinnati Convention Center allows the city to find a location for the marble remnants where the beauty can be celebrated, Johnson said, and hopefully to a location where people can once again travel through the arch to experience its impressive craftsmanship. The four-story neoclassical arch was originally the memorable facade of the RKO Albee Theater, the fanciest of Cincinnati's movie places. Designed by theater architect Thomas W. Lamb, the Albee opened on Christmas Eve in 1927 during the late silent movie era. The interior was even more majestic, decked out in marble with brass fixtures. But urban renewal and the rise of suburban cineplexes spell the end of the downtown movie houses. Located on Fifth Street, opposite Fountain Square, the Albee was a prime location for redevelopment in the 1970s. After efforts to preserve the Albee fell short, many of the fixtures were auctioned off and it was demolished in 1977. During the demolition, workers carefully dismantled the arch and placed the pieces in a scrapyard beneath the Brent Spence Bridge until a location could be found to display it. It has been part of the convention center for the past 38 years. Now, the Albee Arch will go back into storage until a new home is determined. Architect Moody Nolan's $200 million design for the revamped convention center will feature glass walls and an exterior metal cladding where the Albee Arch, brick, and red granite now stand. 3CDC is currently seeking a subcontractor to demolish the parts of the building that won't be included in the redevelopment. The Albee Arch will be removed piece by piece and packaged up so that it can be put back together like a puzzle, Westbrook said. The arch is expected to come down later this year. The cost for its removal hasn't been determined yet. Reese's Union Terminal murals are staying. Reynold Reese's famous Union Terminal mosaic murals are staying where they are. They have already been saved from the wrecking ball twice. Original to the construction of Union Terminal in 1933, the murals by the German-born Art Deco artists depict many of the Cincinnati's prominent and historic industries, including Procter & Gamble, U.S. Playing Card, Conn's Meats, and Cincinnati Milling Machine. When the Union Terminal Concourse was demolished in 1974, preservationists rose up to save the artwork. 14 of the murals were saved, but the largest one, depicting a map of the United States, was destroyed. The murals, measuring 20 feet by 20 feet and weighing 8 tons each, were loaded onto trucks and driven across the river to the terminals at Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport. When CVG closed two terminals back in 2016, the city of Cincinnati got 9 of the murals back. The Canton County Airport Board paid $1.45 million to remove and transport the murals, and the city paid $750,000 for the cost of having them mounted. These murals capture the ambition, the innovation, and the grit that makes Cincinnati what it is today, then City Manager Harry Black said in 2016 when they were unveiled on the western facade of the convention center. And that's where they will stay. The hands that built the city will be torn down. The colorful title-like mural covering the corner of the convention center at Elm and 6th Streets won't be preserved at all because it was painted directly onto the exterior wall. Added to the building in 2013 by Artworks, The Hands That Built Our City highlights the hands of the workers found in Reese's famous industrial murals from Union Terminal. The mural was painted to look like real tile by Artworks designer Ginny Ustick and a team of 11 youth apprentices. New hands, including 2 convention center employees and 1 youth apprentice, were added to the collection of Reese's hands. Artworks has partnered with the city for 15 years on convention center-related installations. Colleen Houston, CEO and artistic director, told the Inquirer that 100 artists and even more fabrication partners were employed to work on these projects during the time. The vision had always been to celebrate local artists and create jobs for local artists, she said. The works are really special because they are inspired by the city itself. Houston aims to make recommendations to the city on where these pieces should be displayed in the future. It's our hope that the art is preserved and presented in similar public spaces that open and are accessible to the community, she said. We're anxious to have conversations with the city and see what could look like. Which pieces of art will be removed and preserved? Buds, Blossom, Branches, and Burrows for the Queen by Brenda Barbell. Cincinnati Icons by Sarah Sormier. Fluss by Sandra Gross. Humanity Outpost Marker by Edward Casagrande. Once Upon a River by Tina Westcamp. Pork Understeen by Kim Shiflett. Riverfront Rise by Nicholas Mowgli. Roebling by John and Marcia Coverman, Grace Majer, and Abby Smart. River Waves by Hayes Shancy of Brush Factory. And Wall of Queens by James Pat. What about future art at the Convention Center? Plans to bring new art into the renovated Convention Center haven't been revealed, but it is a priority, according to 3CDC. Whether or not the city and the nonprofit developer will partner with a local entity like Artworks remains to be seen. If you look at the world-class convention centers across the country, they always have incredible art installations, added Artworks Houston. And with that, that concludes the first headline article for today. We will move on to the other headline article. Bingles County grumble over lease. Team attorney on talks, we've seen no progress. Scott Wortman, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. Talks between Hamilton County and the Bingles on a new Paycor Stadium lease have not progressed as quickly as the team and county leaders had hoped. And the Bingles are getting impatient. Interviews with the Inquirer and communications obtained through an open records request reveal. In terms of moving forward on lease negotiations, there we've seen no progress. Aaron Herdigs, an attorney for the Bengals, told the Inquirer this month. And we're wondering, we really have genuine questions about what the county wants. The Inquirer in January asks for communications between the Bengals and Hamilton County to see the progress on the negotiations expected to start this year. The county responded to the Inquirer's request April 8th. The exchange showed the Bengals growing frustrated with the county this past summer after the team had made several proposals to the county for lease extensions. The team has grown concerned that there really isn't political will for any deal, wrote Bengals Vice President Troy Blackburn in an email dated August 8, 2023, to the Hamilton County Administrator Jeff Aludo after the two met to discuss the lease. A green light to start negotiations. Hamilton County Commissioners, in an open meeting Tuesday, also expressed anxiousness to start negotiations. Board of Commissioners President Alicia Reese, after receiving an update on current upgrades made to the stadium, called for the county administration to develop a timeline for the lease negotiations and release it to the public. It's time, Reese said. We need to give everybody a deadline so we're not at the last minute with their back against the wall. Aludo, in an interview with the Inquirer on Tuesday, said he took to the commissioner's comments as a green light to start lease negotiations on the county in the next 2 months and get plans to understand what bigger renovations need to be done to the stadium. There's been a lot of work going on in the stadium getting us prepared for this, Aludo said. We still have time. We'll get this done. Why the two sides need a deal. Deadlines loom for the team and county on a lease that could result in hundreds of millions of dollars in repairs on Paycor Stadium over the next 2 decades. The 26-year lease ends June 2026. The Bengals have a deadline of June 2025 to decide whether to exercise the first of 5 2-year extensions allowed under the lease. After that exchange in August, the county commissioners in December agreed to make $39 million in repairs and renovations to Paycor Stadium in 2024. The repairs include a new turf, refurbished club seating, and an expanded plaza to improve entering and leaving the stadium. This is on top of $39 million in upgrades to the Bengals made since January 1st of 2022, including improved concession stands and LED ribbon boards. Only a good start. Herzig said the team is pleased with the improvements of the plaza and the seating the county is making. "We think it's a good start, but it's not nearly enough just to maintain the building," Herzig said. "So it's only a good start, and the big question is, what does the county want to do next? And we do not know." The $39 million in upgrades are still nowhere near the amount Blackburn proposed in an email to the county on August 8th. Blackburn proposed the county commit $150 million in improvements and repairs to the stadium by the end of 2024, and $150 million by the end of 2025. The Bengals would kick in $50 million. In exchange, the Bengals will extend the lease another 5 years through 2030. The extension would give the team and the county time to work out a long-range solution, Blackburn wrote. Aludo said the Bengals' proposal was a good start for negotiations, but too high of a price tag for so short an extension. "The $300 million investment is expensive for a 5-year extension," he said. "Taxpayers should be very concerned about entering in that type of short-term arrangement," Aludo said. A study completed in 2022 by architect firm Gensler showed the stadium needs $493 million in maintenance and basic upgrades over the next 20 years. The architect in the study said the price tag didn't include bigger ticketed items for the fan experience, though it didn't specify what those items would be. These bigger ticketed renovations will be addressed in a master plan expected to be completed in June, Aludo said Tuesday. That master plan was originally slated for completion at the end of 2022. "The master plan has taken a lot longer than we had hoped for," Aludo said. Bengals have made proposals. "The Bengals have made proposals in the past," Herzig said. In the June email, Blackburn alluded to previous offers from the Bengals to extend the lease in 1-year increments in a deal that would span 10 years. Aludo, the county administrator, responded in a September 5th email that the county wants to move forward as quickly as possible, but that there appears to be some practical challenges inherent with the approach. Aludo, in the letter, said it wasn't appropriate to go into the details of the email, but offered to speak with Blackburn in response. Aludo touted the plans to make capital improvements in the next year, a plan that ended up being the $39 million project underway. He said that the county is committed to maintaining and improving the stadium. "I just want to address your stated concerns, as we discussed previously, that the county absolutely shares the team's desire to keep Paycor Stadium its home for decades to come," Aludo said in the email to Blackburn. "It's going to heat up here this year. The county will be better positioned to negotiate terms of a new lease when the master plan commissioned by the county and the team is completed this year," said Hamilton County Commissioner Denise Dryhouse, Dryhouse and the county and the Bengals have already started talking, and the $39 million in repairs does show progress. It will ramp up as we get a better sense of the master plan, Dryhouse said. It's going to heat up here this year. Stadium timeline. March 19, 1996. Hamilton County voters approved a half-cent sales tax to pay for the construction of a football and baseball stadium on Cincinnati's riverfront. May 29, 1997, lease signed by Hamilton County and Bengals for the yet-to-be-built Paul Brown Stadium, known as Paycor, lease outlined the responsibilities of the county and the teams in the construction and maintenance of the stadium. August 19, 2000, newly built Paul Brown Stadium hosts the first NFL game, a preseason game between the Bengals and the Chicago Bears. August of 2022, Bengals sell the naming rights of the stadium. Paycor HCM Incorporated buys the rights, renaming it Paycor Stadium. August 8, 2023. Bengals Vice President Troy Blackburn sends emails to the County Commissioner Jeff Aluto expressing frustration that the negotiations on a new lease haven't had much progress. Proposes the county put up $150 million in 2024 and $150 million in 2025. The team would put in $50 million. September 5th, 2023, Aluto responds to Blackburn's email proposing investments the county could make to the stadium. December of 2023, county commissioners approve the plan to invest in $39 million into the stadium renovations. And finally, on June 30th of 2025, Bengals have a deadline to decide whether to extend the current lease by 2 years. June 30th, 2026, the Bengals lease with the county for Paycor Stadium expires. And with that, that concludes the headline articles for today. We'll move on to your forecast. Your Sunday looks very nice, with sunny to partly cloudy skies and high temps into the low 80s. Showers and thunderstorms return to the forecast Monday afternoon and will remain in the forecast for the bulk of the upcoming week. Temperatures through the week will remain well above normal in the upper 70s and the low 80s. Now we have your local buzz. Findlay Market ranked among the best public markets in America. Findlay Market was ranked 6th best public market in the country by USA Today's 10 Best Readers' Choice Awards. Ohio's oldest operating municipal market topped public markets in Boston, Seattle, and Napa, California. Findlay Market also ranked above North Market downtown in Columbus, but below Cleveland's West Side Market. Selections for USA Today's 10 Best Rankings are nominated by a panel of industry experts, vetted by 10 Best Editors, and voted on by the public. Cincinnati has won in several 10 Best categories this year, including Best Street Art, Botanical Garden, Marathon, and Riverwalk. Here are the 10 finalists for the best public market. Number 1, Milwaukee Public Market. 2, Eastern Market, Detroit. 3, Reading Terminal Market, Philadelphia. 4, Westside Market, Cleveland. 5, Ferry Building Marketplace in San Francisco. 6, Findlay Market in Cincinnati. 7, the Boston Public Market. 8th is the North Market downtown in Columbus. 9th is Park Place Market in Seattle. And finishing out the list at 10 is the Oxbow Public Market in Napa, California. USA Today is owned by the Enquirer parent company, Gannett. With that, we will move on to Today in History. Today is Sunday, April 28th, the 119th day of 2024. There are 247 days left in the year. On this date in 1788, Maryland ratified the Constitution of the United States, becoming the seventh state to do so. 1945. Walter Ardisio executed dictator Benito Mussolini. The Italian fascist and his mistress, Clarita Bassahi, were executed in a village in northern Italy. The next day, their bodies were dumped in Milan's Piazzale Loreto for public display. 1965. Over 22,000 U.S. troops invaded the Dominican Republic to forestall the establishment of a communist dictatorship and protect American interests. 1967. Boxer Muhammad Ali cited religious beliefs in his refusal to be drafted into the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War. He was immediately stripped of his heavyweight title and later convicted of draft evasion, banned from boxing for 3 years, sentenced to 5 years in prison, and fined $10,000. Ali avoided prison while he appealed this sentence, which the Supreme Court overturned in 1971. And finally, 1996. Australia's worst mass shooting happened in the Port Arthur area of Tasmania. Martin Brandt killed 35 people and wounded 23 others. Bryant was captured the next day and was sentenced to 35 consecutive life sentences without parole. The massacre led to stricter gun control laws in the country. The next article we have for you is Temple Tower was Cincinnati skyscraper that didn't materialize. Our History with Jeff Seuss, Cincinnati Enquirer, USA Today Network. This story originally appeared in the February 1st, 2015. It is part of the Best of History columns for Jeff Seuss. In 1929, the First Presbyterian Church, the oldest congregation in the city, announced their ambitions plan to replace the church at 4th and Main Streets with, of all things, a 40-story skyscraper. The combined office building and church, to be called Temple Tower, would be 470 feet tall, according to an August 25, 1929 Enquirer article. It was announced the same day as the grand plans for the Crew Tower complex, which would, at 574 feet, become the city's tallest building when it opened in 2 years. In the news clipping, the Enquirer files also had a penciled-in note, "Never built." 2 months after the announcement on October 29th, the stock market crashed and the nation was plunged into a Great Depression it would not crawl out of until the U.S. entered World War II in 1941. The timing was fortunate for Crewe Tower. It was fully funded by Thomas Emery Sons, Incorporated, and construction had already begun. But with only plans and a building manager, Temple Tower became a could-have-been. It was a bold undertaking for a church to take in any era. Perhaps it reflects how optimistic and free-willing the 1920s were after overcoming a world war. Or perhaps the First Presbyterian Church was accustomed to breaking new grounds. Their congregation was the first to build a church in the Cincinnati settlement. They had been worshiping on the 4th Street since about 1790, 2 years after settlers came across the shore here. The property had been purchased from John Cleves Sims in 1797 for just $16, or $393 today. The cost of the land survey. The first church was a bare frame building with logs used for pews. The church building being replaced was erected in 1851. It was noted for its 285-foot neo-Gothic spiral. On the tip was a golden hand pointing up to heaven. The property was valued at $1.3 million in 1929, $23.7 million today, and the future looked bright. The Midland Building Co. was awarded the contract to erect the new tower designed by the acclaimed architectural firm Samuel Hannaford and Sons. Samuel Hannaford died in 1911. Temple Tower will be of the modern type and design, embodying those features of office building and church construction equal to the best practices of this country, so said the Inquirer article. The main office building was to be 32 stories tall, with the ground floor devoted to a monumental entrance, with stores and shops on both sides, and a grand staircase that would lead to the specialty shops on the second floor. Above the offices, a tower would rise 8 stories. 4 floors of the rear portion of the building would be the new church. The Inquirer published sketches of the proposed design as well as interior view of the new chapel. The design was Art Deco infused with Gothic elements, particularly the cathedral-like spire topped with a hand pointing heavenward from the old church. Temple Tower would have joined Crewe Tower and Union Terminal as another major work in the city in the Art Deco style that was becoming immensely popular around the country. The Hannaford firm would next design Dalton Street Post Office and the Times Star Building, both completed in 1933, in this style. The cost of the Temple Tower was estimated to be $2,225,000, or $40.6 million today. The articles did not mention where the church would be getting that kind of money, but evidently it wasn't forthcoming. A later article in 1933 stated, "Changing economic conditions, however, caused this project to suddenly be abandoned." Even if the Depression hadn't hit, it is probably unlikely that Temple Tower would have been built. 4 years after the tower was announced, the First Presbyterian Church was drowning in expenses. The trustees had taken out a $225,000 mortgage for repairs, of about $5 million today, but because of its age, the building needed more work than they could afford just for upkeep. The trustees sold the property to the Hotel Burnett Co. for $260,000, or $6.2 million now. Then, on October 1, 1933, the First Presbyterian Congregational unanimously voted to merge with the Presbyterian Church of the Covenant and move to the church on Elm Street and 8th, where they continue to worship as Covenant First Presbyterian Church. The old church was razed in 1936 and replaced with a parking lot. Today, the Federal Reserve Bank office building is on the site. Temple Tower was only ever a sketch and a dream, but what if? For years, there was an unwritten rule in Cincinnati that no building could be taller than the Crewe Tower until the Great American Tower and its tiara surpassed that building's height in 2011. But But what if another skyscraper had been built at the same time as the crew tower? Would that have encouraged more buildings, taller buildings to be raised, or the two towers to be companions dominating the Cincinnati skyline? Cincinnati's tallest buildings. And number one is the Great American Tower at Queen City Square. Opened in 2011 at a height of 665 feet tall, or 41 stories. Second is Crewe Tower on Vine Street that opened in 1931 at a height of 574 feet, or 49 stories. Union Center Life Insurance Company, aka 4th and Vine Tower, PNC Tower, comes in at third with a height of 495 feet and 31 stories. That building opened in 1913. And finally, we have Temple Tower, never built, at height of 470 feet or 40 stories. And with that, that concludes that article. We will move on to our next article we have for you, and that will be the Just Askin. When will Express Lane open on I-275? Aaron Couch, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. The Inquirer's Just Askin series aims to answer the questions that no one seems to have an answer for, not even Google. Interstate 275 commuters were expecting traffic relief last fall when the Ohio Department of Transportation crews were supposed to be done installing an express lane. A month into the spring of 2024, drivers are still being greeted by the orange barrels where Southwest Ohio's first ever smart lane is supposed to be located on I-275 westbound between Sharonville and Milford. A smart lane is a traffic management tool that uses the existing shoulder as an additional travel lane that is only open during certain times to relieve the heavy periods of congestion, typically rush hour. A digital overhead sign will display a red X when it's closed and a green arrow when it's open. When closed to regular traffic, the smart lane can be used by law enforcement, emergency responders, and maintenance crews. An express lane will also open in the eastbound lanes of I-275, but that one isn't set to open until 2028. That westbound project between US 42 and Ohio 28 is overdue, however. When will the express lanes finally open? The express lane on I-275 westbound is slated to open in mid-June, according to ODOT Public Information Officer Kathleen Fuller. The $22.3 million project took longer than expected due to unanticipated technical and pavement issues, she said. More work needed to be done on the shoulder to accommodate the additional lane. Here's what the westbound project is accomplishing. Repair pavement and resurfaces of the I-275 between US 42, Loveland, Madeira Road, widen the east and westbound median shoulders between Interstate 71 and Loveland Madeira Road. Implement dynamic message signs and variable speed limit for a westbound smart lane. In 2027, work will begin on an eastbound smart lane, which will open in 2028. The project cost is $69.5 million. That project will construct an eastbound I-275 lane between US 42 and Ohio 28, complete westbound smart lane between Loveland Bandera Road and Ohio 28, widen bridges over the Little Miami River, and address interchange improvements at the I-275-I-75 interchange. For more information on these projects, you can look at ODOT's website. Do you have a question for Just Askin? Send it to us at sendlocalnews@inquirer.com. It was sendlocalnews@inquirer.com. Moving on, two Cincinnati breweries among Ohio's World Best Beer Cup winners. 8 Ohio and 2 Cincinnati breweries took home medals at this year's World Beer Cup, with Rheingeist Brewing and Brink Brewing representing the Queen City. The event, organized by the Brewers Association, involved 110 categories covering 172 different beer styles. The awards ceremony was held Wednesday on the final day of the Craft Brewers Conference and Brew Expo America at the Venetian Convention and Expo Center in Las Vegas. Consumers were seeking out high-quality, innovative, flavorful beverages, and Ohio breweries are delivering. Mary McDonald, executive director of the Ohio Craft Brewers Association, said in a prepared statement, "World Beer Cup judges evaluated 9,300 entries representing 2,060 breweries in 50 countries. Each award represents not only exceptional quality, but also innovation and creativity, driving the global craft beer industry worldwide." World Beer Cup competition director Chris Williams said in a prepared statement, "Which Ohio breweries won medals at the World Cup? Here are Ohio's breweries that won medals at this year's event. Fathead Brewery, which has locations in Middlesbrough Heights, North Olmsted, and the Canton area. Gomalt Beer Garden, Columbus. Rheingeist Brewery in Cincinnati. Uncle, a silver and Scottish style air category. Combustion Brewery and Tap Room, which has locations in Pinkerton and Columbus. Loose Ends Brewing in Centerville. Masthead Brewing Co. in Cleveland. Brink Brewing in Cincinnati for Little Zombie or Little Zumi, a bronze in the coffee stout or porter category. Market Garden Brewery in Cleveland." To see the full list of winners, go to www.worldbeercup.org/winners/current-winners. Moving on to our next article, the Ark Encounter creators are bringing a biblical VR experience to Pigeon Forge. Silas Sloan, Cincinnati Inquirer, USA Today Network. A new virtual reality experience will take you on a journey from the Garden of Eden to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Truth Traveler is an immersive VR experience that will take guests on a virtual ride through the Bible, including scenes from Noah's Ark, the Tower of Babel, and the birth of Jesus Christ. And VR is only half of the attraction. The 15.5 million, 26,000 square foot facility will also feature a planetarium, which will show scales of the universe. The attraction is being developed by Answers in Genesis, the creator of the Ark Encounter in Northern Kentucky. Answers in Genesis president Joe Boone told Knox News the attraction will be a fun, entertaining, engaging way to learn about biblical history. The attraction will be located at 2860 Parkway in Pigeon Forge. Guests will go into a bay that can hold up to 12 people. The bays will have VR headsets and benches that move through the experience, adding a layer of realism to the experience. The ride will start by taking participants back in time to Genesis. you'll see all of the Bible's key events before returning to modern-day Pigeon Forge. Truth Traveler will be able to accommodate about 100 people, Boone said, so that translates to about 8 or 9 bays. The planetarium will take you on a trip through the cosmos in its massive 30-meter diameter dome. Food and beverages will be provided. Biblically themed, of course, but the menu has not been finalized. When can you visit Truth Traveler? The attraction broke ground on April 22nd and is expected to open in early 2025. Ticket prices have not yet been determined. To learn more, visit arcencounter.com/virtual-reality. Silas Sloan is the growth and development reporter. Email silas.sloan@knoxnews.com. And the final article we have for you today, Old Chong Building Set to Become All Sweet Hilton. One of downtown's most ornate structures will soon become an extended stay travel hotel with 2,000 square feet of street-level commercial space. On Wednesday, Cincinnati City Council approved a development agreement with Keystone Hotel Group to redevelop the 19th century Chong Building, two buildings with one facade spanning 614 through 616 Race Street, in a Home to Suites by Hilton. The Cincinnati City Center Development Corp, also known as 3CDC, currently owns the property and will sell it to Keystone for $3.25 million. Council also voted to approve a 25-year project-based tax increment financing exemption in which the hotel developer will pay money to Cincinnati Public Schools and City Connector Streetcar in lieu of property taxes. For three decades, the Chong Incorporated sold urban clothing, knickknacks, and old electronics out of the property before closing in the early months of the coronavirus pandemic. Well before that, the building lived a rich history. It once housed a furrier, a furniture company, and a five-and-dime store until 1951 when Butler Bros. Department store moved in and conducted a major interior remodel and covered the original exterior with a Terrace Plaza Hotel-inspired wall of red brick. A few short years later, Kroger on Race and Shalito Place opened there. By summer 2027, it will be a 109-room hotel. Keystone plans to add four stories to 614 Race Street and two stories to 616 Race, bringing the total size of the Chong Building to over 84,000 square feet. The hotel group also owns Town Place Suites by Marriott on West 7th Street that's located one block north, a project that also includes an overbuild. Building the Home to Suites is expected to cost $28 million. And with that, that concludes the first hour of the Sunday Cincinnati Inquirer.